Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this April the 30th on the West Coast, now May the 1st, May Day, on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to also welcome anyone who's listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on blogtalkradio.com. We appreciate all you folks around the world who have been tuning into the show lately. Of course, if you've been listening to the last couple of nights, we've been sharing some research that's published on my website, directlightproductions.com, an article entitled Teenage Mutant Ninja Birth Certificates. It's a follow-up to my Teenage Mutant Ninja Eisenhower's article, and in its actual proof that a birth certificate was created for Dwight David Eisenhower, and a lot of other things that went on. In fact, why we are in the state we are in financially in the United States has much to do with what is in this research and in this story. So if you haven't read it yet, go to my article section. Again, the website is directlightproductions.com. Before we bring on tonight's guest, I'm going to replay something I played about a month ago. I had music composer, producer Mike Fisher on the show, and those of you who remember him remember the song The Great Reneger. We played that a number of times, and we're going to keep playing that song. Of course, that's about the short-legged Mac Daddy going back on his word, as most politicians have done over the years. And as we present the truth to you, we also like to credit even the young people. I played a very funny clip of an 8-year-old girl in Ireland who was making a prank phone call to a demolition company, and she wanted her school torn down, and preferably with the teachers in it. Of course, it was a practical joke, but it was hilarious. And it showed the ingenuity and the dissatisfaction that even the kids in Ireland have with what they learn in school. Now, we have the same problem all around the world, and America is no different. You are indoctrinated in school. You're not taught how to think for yourself. You're not taught the truth about history. You're not taught the truth about science or anything else that goes on in the universe. Only what they conclude you must know to facilitate as a producer of goods, from which they leech every single penny they possibly can. And Mike Fisher's then 8-year-old son, this is 4 years ago, he's 12 now, his 8-year-old son Sam recorded a song called Did Charlie Make a Monkey Out of You? And I thought it'd be interesting to allow you to hear that song before we get into tonight's topic, because it'll put you in the mood of how you felt and how you thought when you first started going to school.
Good morning, class. My name is Professor Poop Fossil, and today we'll be studying the principles of evolution. Once I was a tadpole, long and thin. Then I was a frogger with my tail tucked in. Then I was a baboon in a tropical tree. And now I'm your professor with a PhD. And the question is, did Charlie make a monkey out of you? A little fish changed to a tadpole.
Sam Fisher, or I should say that is Sam Fisher, when he was 8 years old. Boy, I love that British accent of the professor he did in the very beginning. Shows how creative children can be when left to their own devices, doesn't it? Well, it's time to bring on tonight's guest. He's our regular Friday night guest, our resident science advisor, because he is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and our good friend, my co-host, every Friday night on Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. I feel like swinging around in a tree or something after listening to that.
Do you need
but
a banana?
But I must admit, the kid has, yeah, I'd like a banana, too. The kid does have a great voice, and the lyrics are quite interesting.
Yes, they are. They are. It sort of tells a story, doesn't it? not just about evolution, but certainly, you know, all the stuff that we go through. They've taken the Bible out of school. They've taken prayer out of the school. They've taken God, the real creator, out of the school. And we have a lot to be resentful for in that regard. Certainly, we have a lot to be resentful for all the scientific secrets that have been buried under layers and layers of obfuscation and myth, and then or pure ignorance for that matter. And then, you know, we've had the same thing regarding our history, as my research, yours, and others is proving. Virtually every day of the week now, things are unraveling so rapidly for the powers that be, as they like to call themselves. I know there was a particular topic that you wanted to tackle this evening, and it bears repeating for those that may be familiar with it. I have the sneaking suspicion that a lot of people are going to hear this for the first time. So I turn the mic over to you, my good friend, and I remain ready and prepared for any questions or comments you may want to entertain.
Well, first of all, I'd like to clarify one thing. I'm not an expert in this particular field, but this topic that we're going to entertain for the next few minutes here is something which I feel I can't prove it. But there's an awful lot of information out there on the Internet about it right now. And you know, it's just low down enough to be true when you consider the pedigree of the individuals involved. And so I thought it would be a very interesting thing to get the ball rolling with. And also, I think it ties into some of your work, Don.
Yes. We're going to see this recurring pattern as we expose the true history of who our leaders were and how we got into wars, all kinds of wars. We're not speaking about the ones that we have going on today, but they follow the same pattern, don't they?
Yep, more or less. And going back to speaking of wars, this topic actually has its roots in the time just before the Civil War. Of course, in history, we're taught that the Civil War was a war of emancipation for the Negro, and that in reality it was a beneficial thing because it put down slavery. Well, of course, we all know now, or at least most of us do, that in fact the outcome of that whole thing was that we were all enslaved, and the Negroes no more free now than the rest of us. But the real reason for the discord that led to the war was actually the right of secession. And the original way that this country was set up was as a union of affiliated states. And each state was essentially a republic. And they had the right to leave that union at any time that they wanted to. That was part of the arrangement that was initially agreed upon. Now, the only thing that the South did wrong when they left the Union was that they didn't fill out a bunch of paperwork claiming that they were going to do that. They just were a little bit ticked off and got up and left. And so Lincoln used that fact, you know, to initiate aggression against the South to, as he said, reamalgamate the Union. Well, anyway, of course, we know that the Civil War resulted from all of this. But the interesting thing that's come to light here lately is, where did the money come from to fuel the North in its rampage against the South? Well, stuff is surfacing now that suggests very strongly that the North was essentially funded during the Civil War by England, and more specifically Queen Victoria and that gang. And in return for that, what they did was they took a ownership, if you will, on Washington, D.C., and now what's come to light here is that because all of this is beginning to unravel and people are scrambling around trying to hide the sins of the past and trying to save their hide, Her Grace was over here recently with paperwork to demonstrate that she, in fact, holds title to all of Washington, D.C., and as a form of leverage, she was anticipating the use of that to actually force all of our governmental officials, senators, representatives, judges, lawyers, etc., to vacate her property. Now, I think it goes deeper than that myself, because Don and I have talked about this on past shows, but much of the revenue that's collected in the United States by the IRS, which we believe is our normal and lawful income tax, is actually sent back to Her Worship over in England. And in order to make this all legal, of course, through the modifications of the 14th Amendment, I believe it was the 14th because originally it was the 13th, then they got rid of one of the 13th and moved the 14th up. But anyway, the point is that we have all been deemed chattel to the national debt. And every individual's birth certificate, social security number, entire work history, the money you've earned, the family tree and everything else that you belong to is all in records stored in Washington. And this is something that her worship would certainly not want to have disappear from her clutches, because she's bound and determined to keep the hold on America if she can. And so anyway, this has come to light now that, in fact, she owns this piece of territory. And I guess that, from what I hear, she and Obama are at each other's throats, which is, of course, very interesting. But what's hanging in the balance isn't just a few square acres down there in Washington, but also the private and financial aspects of paperwork and proof that keeps us enslaved to this foreign government is apparently what's being sought. And what's interesting is our copies of all this stuff was demanded to be buried somewhere in the archives where nobody would ever find it. And one of the things that happened was that the guy who was given this task to perform apparently did it very well, and then he met an untimely death. He just happened to die. You know how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Did he commit suicide by any chance?
I'm not sure how he... more than likely, you know, he probably shot himself in the back 8 times or something like that. These things happen occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's the basis of which this whole thing is pivoting on. And I thought it was an amazing story because even though I haven't seen the documentation, there's an awful lot of it flying around on the Internet right now concerning this issue. And the whole bleeding bunch of them are just crooked enough to have arranged a transaction of this sort, you know, for their own purposes. So I wanted to bring it to light, and I think it's one of those things that people can delve into on their own, and if anything is discovered or comes to light, it would be wonderful if they would give us some feedback. Don't you think so, Don?
Sure. Now, you mentioned that that this issue dovetails with my research, and it does. In the Three Stooges Go to Washington, parts 1 and 2, I made the connection to the British royal family via the individual who was Prince Albert Edward, who eventually became Edward VII, the King of England. And this is on the heels of his mother, Queen Victoria, who you were referring to as having been the financier of the Civil War. Now, when we follow that family, actually that family was not originally from England. They were from Germany. And their family name was considered to be Battenberg at the time, or in German, Battenberg. And it was Edward, upon taking the throne, that changed the name to Mountbatten, which is the English translation of Battenberg. So that was an attempt to anglicize an otherwise German family, particularly an Ashkenazi family. And that has great significance because those are the controllers of the central banks of the world, the Ashkenazis. And so it does dovetail into my research. It's not any great discovery. What was the discovery in my research is that John Sidney McCain was really John McCann. And that was an out of marriage child produced. Actually, there was a whole line of people who were became infiltrators in the U.S. Navy, which basically establishes that family within the admiralty aspect of our military, the law of the sea. And that was certainly a step in bringing the law of the land and the law of the sea together as one concept. So throughout history, I would presume that whenever this country was out of money for whatever reason, especially from 1913 onward, when they created the Federal Reserve and this fiat financial system, basically usurping the authority of the U.S. Treasury, which was the sole entity that had the constitutional right to print money or to issue currency to the people. That we were stripped of that that fundamental, but that's not what we were taught in school, was it?
No, but then again, none of this is what we were taught in school.
Yes.
And, you know, the thing that seems to be a recurring theme here is that if you look at if you bear all this in mind and you look at the First World War and the Second World War and possibly wars after that, it really begins to make you wonder if the U.S. and its peoples haven't just been used as a big club to do the bidding of another nation. Because England may have pulled in her horns as far as her colonization efforts and her her other conquests around the world, but in fact, it may have continued via the U.S.'s involvement in all these things, with the understanding that we'd get the black eye internationally, and the monies that were involved in all of this would flow back to England. And, you know, I can't prove that, but it certainly looks that way. And if it is true, even to one-tenth of a degree, it's something that we should be up in arms about if we care about this country.
Because, yes.
I don't know about you, but I'm not going to do the bidding. I'm not consciously going to do the bidding of some mental midget just because there are some moldy papers laying around that suggest that I'm owned by that person.
Yes, well, we had the same situation during the Revolutionary War. That was financed by King George, and it was many, many years until anyone discovered that. I couldn't tell you exactly when that was, to tell you the truth. I suppose it came just before, you know, this talk right now. And this is because the Queen of England has been in the United States recently, and of course, there have been so many financial shenanigans played, and I've reported that. I'm not the only one reporting that, but certainly there's been a heist of $6.2 trillion that was put in the form of a loan to Pennsylvania Investments, Michael C. Cottrell's corporation. Now, Michael C. Cottrell was the secretary and treasurer to the Ameritrust Group on behalf of Leo Wanta. So it ties into all of this massive financial corruption, and this $6.2 trillion was given to him to, let's say, start a new economy. And, of course, the bandits in Washington and Wall Street wouldn't have that. They wouldn't allow this to happen because it would be their end, you see. So the Queen evidently was here. I know part of it was to do with that money. And I really don't know what she could effectuate or influence by being here that she couldn't from the other side of the pond. But she was here for a while, and then depending on which account you pay attention to, she was more concerned just about getting the money and not following up on on the intention to kickstart this economy. These people worldwide who are involved in this international money laundering cabal and filled with Ponzi schemes, selling bad paper to foreign countries and then destroying their economy through a multiplicity of schemes, you know, they can't trust one another. So your suspicion is that possibly she was here also to get a hold of those documents. Is that what you're saying?
Well, she supposedly brought her copies with her. What I heard was that the Americans had buried their copies where nobody would ever find it. And, you know, the old out of sight, out of mind type thing. And she showed up to verify the fact that she didn't care whether we hid our copies or not, because she had hers. But the reason for her rampage was that it came to light in view of all this phony paper and derivatives and stuff that's flying around, that apparently, starting with Bush Sr. and then going down through the whole chain of subsequent presidents, including Bush Jr. and, of course, our dear friend Obama, the Queen's name had been forged on many of these documents, implying that she was a partner to some of these transactions, which, of course, made it easier to sell, but which, in fact, apparently was not true. And so she got ticked off that that somebody would have the audacity to do this to her, and came over here waving the other document around and threatening to vacate all of Washington. Frankly, I'd like to see her do it, but that's neither here nor there. The point is that there's more going on than you could ever imagine, and I'm sure that when this does come to light in its entirety, you know, American people are going to be shocked beyond recovery when they really see the extent of what they've been forced to become involved with.
Well, this story, if true, and I don't know, you know, what your source is, I'm certainly open to, you know, entertaining that you got it from a reliable source. Don't get me wrong. I hadn't heard that, but it wouldn't surprise me because I know a lot about the other things that are going on, and particularly the hijacking of the what is called the Freedom and Prosperity Funds. And the numerous people that for some 20 to 30 years have been waiting for investments to be returned to them, along with all the proceeds gained therefrom. And that's being hijacked. The scandals with the foreign banks, Germany and in England itself, the Bank of England has been in a lot of hot water. She cannot be ignorant of those facts. I'm speaking of the Queen now, especially with a brilliant writer right there in her midst in London, Christopher Story, and his International Currency Review and his other intelligence publications regarding world economies. Christopher's research and my research happened to have dovetailed. I wasn't following him really at all until I had heard about the Wantagate story, and I became interested in the general themes he was writing about, and I found that this collaboration between the Nazis, not just under Hitler, but certainly that period of time, and the Stalinists, some would call them. Well, we're back, folks. We had a blackout for a moment here. total hit the switch. And I mean, everywhere. There wasn't a light bulb on in sight for miles. But we're back on the air. So I was in the middle of talking about this collaboration between the Bolsheviks of the Kremlin and the Nazi Party. And this came, actually, this collaboration was pre-planned before World War II began. And it continued up to today. In fact, we have that element very much alive at the current time. So the conflicting stories have to do with all the and the disinformation have to do with the fact that they want to hide the fact that this collaboration is going. That definitely dovetails with my current research, and the research of Chris Story in regard to the finances. He frequently mentions the Dachau DVD, which is the Deutsche Verteidigungsdienst. It's the underground Abwehr that they brought to the United States and gave them virgin territory, basically, to expand, and that resulted in NASA, and that resulted in the CIA, and now we have the NSA and Homeland Security, all the things that they did in Nazi Germany we have here again. FEMA could be added to that as well. And when we're taught how these all these different countries are our potential enemies, and in reality behind the scenes, they're stealing all of our assets. They're stealing money through all the public programs. I've written about much of that in this last piece that I did. This all dovetails into the same situation, Jim. And I appreciate you hanging in there, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wouldn't have deserted you. That's for sure. But, this is really amazing because it really brings to light the fact that, you know, what we're taught to believe is so different from what's really going on. And there is definitely a hidden agenda. And I'm just wondering how far that extends. You know, I've often heard it said over the years that if this so-called elite group that runs things around here, if they could bring down the U.S., then they can definitely conquer the whole world. And seems to me that they've certainly been chiseling away at the foundations of our country as best they can, and they've been doing so for quite some time. You know, the thing that's really amazing to me is exactly what you had mentioned, which I had also heard of course, the fact that many of the Nazis and Nazi organizations were brought to the United States and given basically free rein within the government itself. A lot of the people that didn't get sacrificed at Nuremberg wound up with a nice home and a cushy income right in the heart of our own government. And that's an amazing thing. It's just hard to swallow, but it's true.
Well, you've seen this reflected in the scientific community as well. You know, the Bergs and the Steins and all the German-sounding names. You know, this word Ashkenazi means German, but that word is not used by the Germans. German people don't use that word. See, this is the Zionist movement in disguise, and you know, they tell us, well, the Nazi Party was the German National Socialist Workers Party. That's not what it stood for at all. In fact, it's the last two syllables of the word Ashkenazi.
Right.
Pretty simple when you look at it. You know, there's another aspect of this too, and I don't really mean to divert away from the central focus of the topic, but it's the issue of the English language. And we have been discussing this on past shows. Certainly this week we discussed this a couple of times, where the language is a dichotomous language. It says the opposite of what it really means. But what we're taught is that opposite. And we have examples of that over and over again. And I recognize that in science. I'm sure you do as well, don't you?
Oh, we could do a whole show on the things that we've uncovered over the years in science that relate to various types of disguise and subterfuge, or whatever other words you want. Obfuscation is one of your favorite words. Yeah, it just goes on endlessly. And, you know, the interesting thing, too, Don, is the only reason why I found out any of this stuff is simply because of, as we talked about in the past, you know, I've had the tenacity for the past 42 years to just plunge ahead with my own research at all costs and examine various things which are held to be indisputable truths, and in fact they're not, and or they're only partially true, you know, or they're a special case or something like that, you know, but they're not a hard and fast law that can never be challenged in any way, shape, or form, you know. And this is the kind of thing that actually lots of people should be doing in every facet of life, because we know enough now to know that the reality that we think we know is basically a facade. It's a painting. It's an illusion. And in order to find out what's really going on, you have to have the chutzpah to dig into it on your own, because nobody's going to offer it to you. Nobody's going to hand you the truth on the platter, that's for sure. Are you still there, Don?
I'm back.
It must be a rough night out there in the wilds of Ohio.
It is. Oh, man, talk about throwing the switch.
is the whole neighborhood going off, or what's exactly happening out there?
It's about a three-second flash. Everything off, and then back up.
That's interesting.
It is. Are we still on the air?
Yeah, according to the guys at the studio, we're still on the air.
Okay. Well, any surprise?
You know what you need to do, Don? You need to get yourself an inexpensive UPS so that when they pull these tricks, it won't affect you at all.
Well, they shut down the internet and everything too when that goes down. I mean, they're hitting the whole area. I don't know how far it goes. I imagine I'll find out eventually. But that's one of the pitfalls, you know. See,
yeah.
we need your battery operated Dynaflux generator. That would solve the whole problem.
Well, it's funny that you should mention all of that stuff, because just this week we've been having some really interesting conversations about what to do with some of this technology. And of course, you know, the pivotal issue is the same as it always is money.
Yes.
But I have a feeling that things are going to somehow resolve themselves, because there's too much information, and it's not just because it's mine, it's because it has the potential of doing a vast amount of good in the world. I just don't think it should be suppressed.
No, and the powers that be really don't want to see that happen, do they? They're doing everything they can to thwart any kind of benefit to humanity. You know, when I go back to thinking about the, you know, while the power was out, I was thinking about the Nazis' fascination with flying saucers and all the different craft they developed. And of course, the Americans had to get that technology, you see. And they, when they got it, they had to give it to the Soviets because they were in a partnership with the Soviets. Secretly, they were in a partnership. And, is it any wonder why the Soviets and the U.S. both took control of certain parts of Germany? Soviets taking over East Germany and the Americans, West Germany, along with the British and the French. You see, they built this country up to be the industrial might that it was, and then the technological might that it became, and then basically just congeal all that together in one big operation. That's what we're looking at. This is a pretty simple matter. And where you have people...
But now,
Go ahead.
Now it seems that the secondary... or perhaps a tertiary aspect of the plot is that they don't want America to have any industrial might anymore. And so slowly over the past 50 or so years, all of the heavy industry and all of the armament and the shipbuilding capacity and steel forging and everything else has been removed from here. And it's slowly become... nothing more than a huge market for every imaginable, commodity that that people could ever desire, and you know the endless hypnotic droning on the TV of various advertisements and products and all this kind of stuff, and. People just go out and mindlessly buy all this stuff, whether they need it or not. But the country as a whole has suffered enormously. I was talking to my partner, George, about this not so long ago. Just want to see how bad it is. It's a shame that nobody is interested in doing anything. But if you were, for instance, even do something benign, like build a little model steam engine or something. If you don't have a shop of your own, just go out and try to find a capable machinist to build you something like that. It's really getting to be very hard to find anything of that sort. And the same thing's happening in the electronics world. I remember as a kid, when you hear the word electronics, I mean, my brain used to light up. I'd run into a store, and they would have literally hundreds of components for you to shop around through. You know, power resistors and transformers and, SCRs and just about every imaginable tube you could think of. And you could literally buy a king's ransom worth of stuff for a very small amount of money and go home and build yourself a transmitter. Now the word electronics no longer means, you know, a vast ocean of components. Now it seems to refer to finished products like TVs and clock radios and VCRs and I don't know what all, just endless amounts of products that have electronic components in them. But if you really want to do what I used to do as a kid, that's become very hard to do also. You have to literally hunt around to find someone who supplies the raw components anymore. And so, you know, I'm sure this scenario is repeated over and over and over again with almost everything. The only thing is that most people don't notice it because they don't care. They don't do anything.
Well, you're right. They've created lots of gadgets to keep people busy, whether it's a cell phone. You know, it used to be when people first got cell phones, it was considered something to be used in an emergency. Let's say you were out in the country or out in the desert and you maybe threw a rod on your vehicle or got a flat tire or your battery went dead and your car wouldn't run. You could summon help. And then it just became a nonstop assault on the minds of people to have a phone, to have a cell phone, or to get one for everybody in the family without people really realizing what kind of expense they were getting into and how all of these things were going to be used for other purposes. Cell phones have become cameras. They've become computers for going on the internet. They've become entertainment centers that people can watch videos. And all the personal desk accessories that they had, the Palm Pilots and, you know, the handheld devices that you use for having like a personal electronic notebook and a daily reminder. It's obscene in how they've turned that into games now. Everything's a game. You can play games on your cell phone. And you see people driving down the highway doing just that. Well, you know, they devise these things so that they can then again attack the people for using them or for having them. You know, it's really dark. It's really evil what they do. And like you said, you can't even go to the standard commercial electronics store like a Radio Shack and buy components that were available just 5 years ago. Basic components are virtually nil. They have a lot of the same things, and they're things that most people wouldn't use, especially someone that was into creating their own circuits on a breadboard and wiring different devices to get them to work together. Those things aren't available because they don't want people to be able to be creative and use their ingenuity in inventing anything. They want to control everything. And they begin that in the schools, and then after somebody goes into extreme debt to pay back college loans, which they're making tons of money on because they're hypothecating the fact that that money will be repaid, people are pushed into jobs that they're not even prepared for, not even related to what their major was in school. And so it's everything's become a chaotic rat race. And of course, these people have to get these things or they're not, keeping up with the Joneses. And, you know, they've been browbeaten and brainwashed into thinking that they have to look a certain way or dress a certain way or talk and act a certain way, drive a certain kind of car. And if they're not, they're not cool. They're not accepted by mainstream society. And none of that has anything to do with who we are. This is, we go back to that topic about, you know, identifying the person. All of this is designed to mask or obfuscate, to use a word that you said I like to use, to obfuscate who we are. And that therein lies our true power, is discovering who we really are and what gifts we have, what abilities we have. So it doesn't matter if it's the Queen of England here trying to discover the papers, or show that she's got the papers and that she's got contracts, that she gets this money, and somebody's trying to steal it. Obviously, when she puts forth money, if she has, $6.2 trillion is a lot of money, my friend. If she has put that money out in the form of a loan to kickstart this economy and get it on an honest path, and that has been stolen, she has every right to be angry. I'm not saying I disagree or agree with the precept under which that was done initially hundreds of years ago. We see this is all done. This is a big long-term goal planned from top to bottom to work out just like it is. And it doesn't have to be that way, but everyone's bought into all the illusions. Come back to that word again, too. Go ahead, Jim. I don't mean to go on like that.
No, it's no problem at all. But you did bring up something that's really interesting, and that is, you know, the shallowness of the education. I mean, good Lord, it's really bad. I have a sister who's a teacher, and she's been telling me, you know, nightmare stories about you know, what the educational system has been reduced to and how they spend their time. And, you know, she's tenured already, and, of course, she's only a couple of years from retirement. So a lot of people, you know, did just go with the flow because they don't feel that they can do anything. But they certainly can report on it, and God bless her, she wants to write books about it when she gets out of the, you know, the everyday teaching routine. But, you know, to dwell on that topic momentarily, the ramifications of that are unbelievable. I remember when I was electrical foreman up there in Michigan, I used to spend a lot of time up at Lake Superior State College, you know, using their library. And I got to be pretty good friends with electrical engineering professors up there. And it was just amazing the questions that they used to ask me. You know, they didn't know how to hook up motors. They didn't know how to make basic measurements. It was just unbelievable. And that was 30 years ago, 25 years ago. Well, it's probably a lot worse now. And the thing that keeps coming back to my mind, Don, which, you know, is it's just such a contrast with what we have today that it still shocks me. When I was working in the shipyard as a kid, funding my way through college, there was an old German gentleman there that was the head of a whole machine shop, and his name, I don't honestly remember his name anymore, but they used to call him Pappy. And he told me the kind of education that he had received in Germany and what he had to do in order to get his degree, and it was just unbelievable. He went through a complete shop apprenticeship for 8 years before he even opened a textbook in a classroom. Learned all the basic machining, learned all of the basics of casting and forging and all of that good stuff. Then spent 4 years going through the normal engineering curriculum. And in order to graduate, he had to present a thesis along with an operational device of his own design. And what he designed was a diesel engine. And he, not only did he design it, but he built it from scratch. He made the molds, he poured the, you know, he produced the blanks and the green sand, he poured his own castings, he machined his own parts, and he assembled the thing, and of course it had to run. Now that is an engineering education. And I don't care how you cut it, I doubt very much that anybody in this country walking out the door of a college with a sheepskin that could do that type of thing. But that's how it's changed. That's the difference.
I can vouch for similar, well, I can vouch for the statement you just made that basically transcends all aspects of a college education. I know people who got 4-year degrees in music production and never learned the difference between analog and digital audio. And went to school during the digital age using computers and didn't know how to turn on the computer even. You know, how do you hire someone like that? You give them a chance, but they end up failing because they're literally lost. They don't know where to begin. You see, they go into these labs and the equipment's turned on. They're not taught how to turn it on. They're not taught how to turn it off, let alone operate it once it's on. And they're not taught the elements of music and sound and recording techniques and applying basic music theory. You have to have some understanding of that, as you well know. It's parallel as math and physics. If you're going to be a scientist and work in some aspect of creating devices that are going to be used, what I see in your description of this German man was that he was taught a skill that the government could eventually use or business could use. There's nothing wrong with that in and of itself. That's what people were taught here. To some extent, a lot of people's training was on the job, especially during time of war. There were women that worked as waitresses in restaurants that were thrust into manufacturing jobs. And maybe what they did was simple. They didn't build the whole airplane, but they had to learn how to use a screwdriver and identify a screw or a bolt. Had to be able to do that. But they had pretty limited jobs, and it became a teamwork kind of thing. But they didn't really realize what they were doing, how these things they were building were being used in other parts of the world to murder millions of people. I think having that information in advance may have changed a lot of people's minds. But they were programmed to, as we are today, programmed to follow a certain train of thought. You're presented with information officially through the mainstream media, and you're just supposed to accept that that's what they've always done, you see? And people don't even realize how it's transformed. From where they used to have 2 or 3 hours of news at night talking about world issues, well, they were indoctrinating us then as well. But now you can't watch the news without seeing a game show or some ridiculous reality show prior to it and right after it. Even the news has become a reality show. and that word reality is one of those dichotomies. Doesn't mean what it purports to mean. It's all illusion.
I mean, you're right. It means the opposite for all intents and purposes.
So, I think we're about out of time. Unfortunately, we've been interrupted twice tonight, but certainly we can do a whole show on a number of things that we discussed tonight. What we're bringing to our listening audience, ladies and gentlemen, we're bringing to you a few morsels of history and how it ties in with the reality that we're faced with today. We have people who have hijacked our country despite the proclamations that they make, that they want you to be healthy and secure in this world of terrorism. They create the problem. They wait for the reaction from you, and then they create the solution. It's been done over and over for eons, and it's going on today. They've never stopped doing it. It's about time that we recreate our reality. But you have to be conscious to do that. You can't go to them and ask them. They're going to give you more of the same claptrap. Jim, any closing comment you'd like to make?
Well, I tell you, I'm. It's amazing how my own story about the German guy has got me all fired up, because the emotion that I'm feeling right now is one of resentment and, I don't know, compassion perhaps, in combination. It would really be a wonderful thing. There's so many wonderful minds out there that God has given a lot of talent to and a lot of natural ability, and it's just a sin that's not going to be utilized in the right way. It would just be a wonderful thing if there could be some resurgence of an educational system like the one that was once employed, instead of the garbage that we have now. And the irony of it is, too, you know, not only is the educational system so watered down, but they charge you through the nose for it. You, as you mentioned earlier, you're paying off your educational bills for years after you're done with college. And, you know, it's amazing how they train you to start off with a burden on your back, and you carry that darn thing life, and but you don't pay off your heirs due.
Well, yes, that's true, and it's been set up that way. You see, it's been set up, and they're all the while they're anticipating that money coming in, which is grossly inflated. It bears no resemblance to the actual reality of real costs involved in giving one an education. Why is one school able to teach a student for a whole year at a cost of $1,000 and another one at $60,000 or higher? Why is that? It's merely because one is playing the game and the other one is founded on a totally different principle. And this all feeds this system, this uniform commercial code. The law of the sea, administrative law, turned into the law of the land, married to it. And we've discussed that whole process, the birth process, and the conscript of one's soul and physical body to this system that is a system of slavery. Really, folks, wake up. We're slaves. They've created a slave society, and until you realize that, you will remain one. It's only upon the realization of what they have created on your behalf that we can make a change. Jim, I want to thank you for being on tonight's show. As usual, you did an excellent job. And look forward to your guest appearance next week in the month of May here on Evident Footprints.
Well, thank you very much, Don, and maybe we can harvest some of the things that surfaced during this particular show and use that as a nucleus for discussing other things here in the next coming month.
Okay. And for anyone out there who has been listening to the show and is looking for someone to help put together a prototype or to have something tested or even to explore the idea of getting your idea brought to market, you can contact Jim by going to my web site, directlightproductions.com, click on sponsors, and then click on Accurate Machine and Tool Company. And you'll see the contact information for Jim's partner, George Hamill, and some photos of their machine shop. They're experts in producing the components for just about anything you can come up with. It warrants at least an attempt. If you've got an invention that you'd like to develop and bring to the marketplace, especially if it has anything to do with power production, that's Jim's expertise. But Accurate Machine and Tool Company in Las Vegas, Nevada is there at your service. Jim, again, I wish you a great weekend and a good night, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Don. Same to you.
Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, Windtalkers Radio Network, and BlogTalkRadio.com. Special thanks to Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight and getting us hooked up three times in 1 hour, and also Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Join me next Monday when our special guest will be Dr. A. Truat. In the meantime, I wish everyone a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the blue skies we've been having lately. Want to give a shout-out to the United Galactic Federation, Galaxy of Hendon. Thank them for all the work they've been doing, helping us regular humans here on planet Earth. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.